Folks, welcome to another edition of the Prospect Interview Series here on the No Ceilings NBA YouTube channel and podcast feed. I'm Maxwell Baumbach, and today I am joined by a March Madness legend, Oakland's Jack Golke. Jack, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. Excited to be on. Excited to get into my story a little bit and talk to you here.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure to have you on. Was really excited that we were able to get this opportunity to link up and make this happen. The first thing we always like to throw out to guys, because so many of our listeners and viewers are guys who kind of dip in around the draft. They're not up to date with everything going on in college basketball, so they might not be familiar. How would you describe your game to someone who's never seen you play before?
I would describe my game, especially this last season in college, very unique. Some people love it, some people hate it. So it's I just kind of, the way our offense was designed, I was the guy who would come running off screens the entire game, just constantly moving on offense and shooting a bunch of threes. So whether it's coming off pin downs or transition or just handoffs, any type of action off the ball, I'm always trying to move as much as possible to get myself open and then fire up a three and kind of stay outside the 3-point line for sure.
For sure. Well, it worked for you. You shot 42% on threes off handoffs, over 43% on spot up threes. You got some pull up to you too. You're a really well-rounded shooter, and I think that's what has teams interested. What got you into basketball growing up? Was there anything that like you remember as saying, hey, this is what's going to make me want to, you know, pursue the sport, or is it just something that you were always around?
Yeah. Interestingly enough, like obviously it's pretty typical to have parents that played a sport or siblings and stuff like that. My family was always a big sports family, but no one really played basketball at all. So I just tried a bunch of different sports as a kid. And the more I played basketball, the more I loved it. And I just really, really just enjoyed the game, whether it was practice, games, workouts, playing with friends or playing competitively. I just loved it all. So as soon as I kind of got to middle school and then definitely in high school, I just focused on basketball. In particular, and I've still to this day never got sick of it, never had a day where I didn't love what I was doing, so I feel very very lucky for that.
Mm-hmm. So one thing I'm curious about with you, and I feel like we're actually seeing more and more of this, like guys that either hit their stride later or just get noticed later in their development. When you were in high school, what was the recruitment process like for you? Because you started at Hillsdale, which is a good Division II basketball program. But what was your recruitment like? And was there a point where you realized like, oh, I'm like actually going to play in college? Because I think a lot of people want to. And then at a certain point, you realize that I'm actually not cut out for this. Like, when did you kind of realize like, hey, this is what I'm going to do. It's what I'm going to, you know, play in college. And then what led you to Hillsdale?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say probably, I mean, I always, like you said, everyone wants to play in college. I always wanted to play in college. Probably about 16 or so, like the second to last year of AAU, so going into my junior year, is when I really realized like I definitely can play in college. I had in Wisconsin, the Division III conference, the WEAC, is a really good conference for Division III, and I had like all the WEAC schools were recruiting me pretty hard, so I knew like I was definitely gonna have an opportunity to play college, like whatever level it was gonna be, I was gonna be able to do it. So that's kind of when I realized like this is a real thing, like let's keep working towards getting a scholarship offer and being able to have my school paid for, because that's obviously a big goal, and that makes things a lot easier. So then my senior season of AAU, I was lucky enough to get that scholarship offer from Hillsdale, and but that was my only offer. So I kind of just took it and ran with it and said I was going to make the most of the opportunity because that's the only one I had. So yeah. I just took it and went with it.
For sure. Was your role at Hillsdale much different than the one that you ended up playing at Oakland?
It was like pretty similar. Obviously, I was still a shooter. I was still like that was my role, my predominant role. But I definitely was more well rounded as a scorer. Like I tell my teammates at Oakland, like I used to shoot twos. I used to go inside the 3-point line every once in a while, but they don't believe me. But at Hillsdale, I was probably 3/4 of my shot attempts were threes rather than 95%, 97%. So yeah. I shoot some mid ranges off a ball screen or or have a lot of like back cuts to the rim, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to young players out there? Because I think something that I see locally being in the Chicagoland area is we get a lot of great high school talent from our area. And I think they can tend to, like, I guess overshoot would be the word I would use, yeah, in terms of where they end up playing. A lot of times guys will have that sort of D1 or bust or high major or bust mentality.
Absolutely.
They go somewhere, they don't see the floor. In your experience in playing at a Division II level and sort of easing your way up and still getting discovered, what advice would you give to players who are making that choice of, hey, do I go for the big program and maybe take the name value that comes with it, or do I go someplace where I'm going to see the floor and play a whole lot?
Yeah, it's a great question, because that's definitely a huge thing that you see so much these days, is everybody just wants to go to the biggest place possible. And I totally understand it, because obviously the exposure can be great, and it can be really cool to play on that level. But I just think if you truly love the game, if basketball is really your passion, then just go somewhere where you're going to play and where you're going to get a chance to bond with your teammates and things like that, because there's so much more that goes into it than just like the amount of people that are sitting in the arena watching you play. Mm-hmm. So you can get a tremendous experience at a D2 school, D3 school, NAIA, whatever the case may be. It's really what you make of it. If you care about it and you take it seriously, then the results are going to come, and you're going to get the rewards from it. Like, obviously my time at Oakland was amazing, and I'm super fortunate, super happy that it happened. But if my career had only been Hillsdale, I still would have loved it, and I would have no regrets at all. Like, I'm very happy with how the D2 life treated me. So I think really you just got to accept, kind of like, just get to the highest point you can and accept that position, and then just keep working, keep grinding, and maybe something new will come along at that higher level that you wanted in the first place. And it's all just about trying to achieve the maximum potential that you have.
For sure. So when you were wrapping up at Hillsdale and you made the decision to make the jump up to Oakland, what was that decision-making process like? What was your thought process? Were you nervous at all? Or was it one of those things where it's like, I want to play D1. I know I can do it. Like, what sort of led to the decision to go D1 and specifically Oakland?
Yeah. So I finished, I had graduated from Hillsdale that year, and we didn't really have any like graduate programs, and I knew I had the COVID year. So mm-hmm. It all just made sense to kind of move somewhere else for my last season. And my coaches were supportive of that. Thankfully they made everything really easy on me, and even helped me to make the transition. So that was really nice. And Oakland just came calling right away. My coach had a good relationship with Coach Campy at Oakland, being both of them in the state. They had played a couple exhibition games against each other and things like that. So as soon as they reached out, they kind of sent me their film, and they're like, this is what we've done with shooters in the past, guys like Max Hooper, Travis Bader, mm-hmm. Just a lot of great results. So it all kind of made sense. I got recruited by a couple other schools, but to be honest, as soon as Oakland was in the picture, that was kind of where I wanted to go, because I had watched some of those guys in the past, and I had also seen recently the success that their team had, and I kind of felt like I could be that next piece to really push them over the edge in that next season. And I'm glad I made that decision, because I went there, and we obviously had a great group of guys, and the chemistry that we had too in just one season was tremendous.
Yeah, you guys were a joy to watch, and I really think that league as a whole this year, the Horizon Conference in general, I had so much talent in it that it was one of those conferences that I think if you were keeping a close eye on things, you know, you'd think, hey, you know, maybe someone who comes out of this league is going to do something in the tournament, and it ended up being you guys. we're going to talk about that in a minute. But the next thing I kind of wanted to ask you was, you mentioned like taking more shots inside the arc in a D2, and I know that you mentioned like Oakland, you know, showing you Max Hooper, which like the most fitting name in basketball history that anyone's ever had. But was it difficult to accept that role at a point? Like, is it difficult to just say like, hey, look, like this is just what I'm going to do. I'm just going to be the guy that runs hard off of actions constantly and shoots threes. And like, that's just kind of what it is. Like, was that, I don't know. Was there any difficulty in just saying, hey, like that, you know, I'm not going to say arc at all? Like,
no, it's a great question. I wouldn't say it was difficult, but I had like a couple conversations with my assistant coaches where I was saying I still want to be perceived as a basketball player. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Because some you do get that stigma if you're only shooting threes, like this guy can't do anything else. Like he's super one dimensional. Which obviously, if you're successful at it, it's okay to be one dimensional. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely something that I was thinking of at first. But at the same time, there's so many great players, especially in the NBA, that I had watched growing up that didn't shoot only threes, but I wanted him out of my game after. Whether it's JJ Redick, the way he moved around the floor with pace and came off screens, and Kyle Korver, even guys like Anthony Morrow. There's so many great examples. And I just kind of saw that I could kind of have that impact at Oakland on the college level, and just watch that those guys film previous shooters at Oakland and see how Coach Campy utilizes them. And I really just thought it was going to be a good role for me, and one that I could get better at throughout the summer and throughout the season as I grew more and more comfortable, you know, constantly moving and just being in that type of shape that you have to be to do something like that.
Yeah. So I do want to touch on, because you talked about some of the guys that you maybe model your game after a little bit there. But one thing you touched on was the stigma of being a guy who predominantly shoots threes. And I wanted to ask you about that. Like, is it tough to wear that at times? Because I think a lot of people in general just underestimate the caliber of athlete you have to be to play any Division I sport. Does that get frustrating at times that people might just be like, oh, this guy's like he's just a shooter, and like that's the only thing he does? Where like,
yeah.
Having done a deep dive on your film to prepare for this interview, I think you're a much better athlete than people realize. Is it tough to deal with that at all, or is it one of those things where it's like, hey, it doesn't matter, I went to March Madness and did the thing?
I appreciate you saying how do you grapple with that?
Yeah.
It is tough. I personally don't really I mean, I feel like as a basketball player, as an athlete, like you kind of have to just tune out everything else that is going on around you. So personally, I don't read into anything that people say. I think it's funny when you read some of those comments, just because it's always the people that don't know what they're talking about. So yeah. You can't take it seriously. But it's definitely something that happens. Like people will kind of discount you as an athlete, like you said. But I mean, if you watch those guys like JJ Redick or even early 2000s Rip Hamilton, that they're in, Ray Allen, they're in such good shape, they can run for hours. And they're also, the thing that's super important I think is the way you work out, it has to be game speed. Like you see some workouts where guys are kind of just going through the motions and things like that, but if you want to be shooting it at a high level and constantly moving the whole game for 35 plus minutes, you got to be, your workouts have to be harder than the game. So it's all about just those game reps and working at full speed. And the stigma definitely comes along with it. But like I said, it's just something you got to kind of tune out and laugh at. And once you get into a workout with these guys or a game, if it's a player that's saying that type of thing, they'll realize that, hey, you're maybe you're not going to be the vertical athlete that they are, but you have your own specialties.
For sure. And what does a shooting workout look like for you? Because I'm sure that's something a lot of people want to know if they want to, you know, work on their shot. If we've got young players out there listening, what is that process normally like for you when you're going into the gym with a focus on your shot?
It's pretty structured, to be honest. I love to start with a specific like mid-range shooting routine, just to get the blood flow, just kind of move back and forth from two spots, like baseline to elbow to elbow, and then elbow to baseline, and get about 30 shots up just to get warmed up. And then I shoot 15 threes from seven spots, five catch and shoot, five moving, and then five like a side dribble. So then I'm kind of ready to go after I've gotten about 100, 120 shots up or something like that. And then it's just a lot of shooting off the move, whether it's like a patterned, like a star pattern type thing, or kind of a five shot series of come off a screen, then come off a ball screen, then shoot like a one dribble pull up, and then kind of run to the opposite side and do the same thing. So you just kind of mix in there's so many good resources on YouTube nowadays. We're so lucky with how many videos you can find. And that would just be my advice to young kids, is if you want a shooting workout, the biggest thing, the most important thing that you might not hear as often, is just you got to be going full speed, game speed. If you watch any videos and they're not going game speed, that's not going to be the best thing for you. But watching videos on YouTube, you're going to find a million different drills. So It can be hard to comb through them, but at the same time, you have so many options that you can just try them all out and see what works for you, because I can't really tell anyone you got to do this specific drill, because it also kind of just depends on what team you're playing for. But I think building the routine is the most important thing, and that's something that I feel like I learned from a guy, JJ Redick, who always talks about his routine and how structured he was. I don't think I'm quite as OCD as he sounds like, but you definitely got to have a routine.
For sure, for sure. I think something else that is so necessary for shooters is the ability to not only move off the ball in terms of just running around, but like getting off of the ball in terms of just like passing it when your shot isn't there. It was something that you did a really nice job with. You had a near 2-to-1 assist turnover ratio this year. Can you just talk about the importance of leveraging that gravity that you carry as a shooter and knowing how to respond when you don't like the look that you've got, you know, coming off a certain action?
Oh yeah. That's honestly, as soon as you start to get treated like the quality of shooter that you think you are, that's when things really open up for your team. And that's, I think, where your true value is. It's obviously important and it's great to bang shots, but you're not going to make 8 threes every night. That's just not going to happen. But if you can be guarded like you're going to make 8 threes every night, that's when you make your team better. So yeah, like you said, it's just coming off screens with pace and always playing with that speed. And then once you catch it, a lot of times the guy's going to be right on your hip and you just got to keep the ball moving. But you're using that advantage of, as you come off the screen, they have to show every time. So they're always putting two bodies on you as you catch the ball. And then it's whether it's hitting the guy for a slip or passing it right back to where it came from so he can hit the guy for a slip, or taking a dribble and swinging it cross court. That's definitely an underrated part of the shooter's game, but it's something that, like you said, as the film, you can really see it, and it's super important.
Yeah, something else that really stood out when I went into the film, and I think maybe the most underanalyzed and underdiscussed part of your game, but I think shooters in general, especially talking with people in NBA front offices, is with shooting specialists now, you're seeing guys that are a lot stronger. You're seeing more Sam Hausers than guys that are, you know, Sam Hausers than Steve Novaks, I guess is how I would put it. You're really strong. Like, you were listed at like 215. You were big. You're able to get bodies off of you when guys are trying to hang on you. Can you just talk about the importance of strength as a shooter and how that helps you throughout the course of the game?
It's huge for sure. I think the best example of it that you can see in the NBA is Desmond Bain. He looks like a linebacker out there, and he does a great job, like you said, of shedding people off and things like that. And it's super important. You got to take care of your body in the weight room, and I think that also goes along with injury prevention. The stronger you get, the less likely you are to sustain injuries and things like that. But it was always something that I cared about, just because I felt like, as a guy who wasn't going to be necessarily as fast or as high of a jumper as some guys at the highest level, but I could be the strongest, and that could be kind of my athletic advantage. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just, when you're coming off screens or trying to make things happen, even on the defensive end, the strength can definitely help, because like you said, people hanging all over you, and you got to be able to create space in small windows. One of the things that I hope there's no refs listening to this, but it is extremely rare that they call a push-off foul off the ball for an offensive player. So yeah, you can use your strength and you can kind of just shove people off of you and then start running again. So it's definitely, it's pretty important, and it's a little advantage you can find.
For sure. For sure. And I think another area of your game where it really showed up was your rebounding. You're a much better rebounder than a lot of guards that I evaluate. Was that part of your game that had always been there? And like, how did that scale up from Division II? Because generally, like, I think, again, a lot of the guys that are up transferring, it's usually like strength and athleticism and things like that, that it's a bit of a curve for them. But you were quite good on the defensive glass for somebody at your position. Where did that sort of come from in your game?
Yeah, I think when I was younger, I'm not proud of it, but I always thought like, oh, rebounding is for the big guys. Like, I don't need to worry about that. But as I got older and kind of matured more with my game, I realized that I can definitely help my team by rebounding, and also just by keeping my guy off the glass. Because a lot of times there's there's wings that will crash the offensive glass pretty hard. So I definitely take pride in that and trying to help my team out in any way possible. And like you said, it's the strength is definitely a big part of it, because you can kind of just wall guys off and then go chase after the rebounds yourself. So yeah, it's really just boils down to whatever is going to give us the advantage on the defensive end, because at the end of the day, man, I just want to go down and shoot a three. So if I can grab the ball and then go do that, it makes it easier.
For sure. The other thing I'm kind of curious about is at the professional level, what position do you feel most comfortable guarding? Like, with that strength, are you somebody who would like to scale up, or would you rather be covering, you know, a more point guard size player? Like, where do you feel most comfortable positionally on defense?
That's a great question. I would definitely say like a wing, a 2-3. I know I'd be slightly undersized height wise in that scenario, but I do think that I can make up for that with my strength and kind of keeping people in front of me and not letting them bully me wherever they catch the ball on the court, type of thing. One thing I'm definitely trying to improve on this offseason, and our trainer that we're working with right now is really good at, is just talking through ball screens and how to guard ball screens. So I know that I will have times where I'll have to guard point guards. So that's something that I need to improve on, and I'm still getting better at. But just studying the film and kind of seeing tendencies of the guys you're guarding, it's really important. So definitely feel more comfortable guarding the wings, but also trying to keep improving and be able to guard that point guard spot as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting, especially like you mentioned, like guys crashing the glass. I felt like that was something that stood out in the Horizon League in general this year, was you just had so many physical guards. Like Youngstown State's always one of those teams. Yep. A guy like Noah Reynolds crashes glass. A guy like BJ Freeman will be at the guard spot for Milwaukee. He rebounds a lot. Like, there's just a lot of that in that league. So I think that's something that kind of almost maybe benefited you in a way, kind of playing against a lot of those bigger physical guys and big guards and guys who like to crash the glass.
For sure. There's a lot of like 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", guys that handle the ball and then go after their rebounds super hard in the Horizon League. So you're definitely right there.
Let's talk about the March Madness run, because we've got to talk about it. I guess just what was it like? You guys go in, you earn your bid in the conference tournament. You beat a really good Milwaukee team to get that auto bid. You play Kentucky, you drop 32 points and hit 10 threes. Talk me through that. Like, just what was the experience like in game, and then kind of the aftermath?
Yeah. To be honest, in game, it was amazing. I was super confident going into it, just because I knew the preparation that we had put in as a team, and also I put in individually, and I knew that just being on a stage like that, I kind of just knew, like, we're going to take advantage of this opportunity. We're going to make the most of it. I didn't know necessarily if it was going to mean a win or a loss, but I knew that we were going to give it everything we had. And once the game started, I missed my first two shots, but I kind of just, sometimes as a shooter, even when you miss, you just know. Mm-hmm. And after I missed those first two, I looked at one of my assistants, and he looked back at me, and he knew too. He was like, oh, it's going to be one of those nights. So then I just kept letting it fly after that. And just the coaches and players did a great job of putting me in position to succeed. But it really felt like just another game while we were playing. Like,
yeah,
it felt like obviously a big game, a big spot, but it didn't feel like this event, if you know what I mean. Yeah. It felt like, okay, this is a big game, and we just came away with the win. Like, that's huge. But then right after the game, we go on a post-game interview with CBS, and then we get an interview with the radio, and then we get another post-game interview, and then we go do our whole set of interviews with all the media at the tournament. And just the more things that kept coming at me, the more I realized, like, hey, this might have actually been this is something big that just happened. And then obviously, like, I had a million messages on my phone, and then Coach Campy tells me that there was like 7 million people watching the game or something like that. And it was just crazy. I couldn't really fathom it at the time and understand exactly what had happened, but just trying to soak it all up in that moment and just appreciate what had happened.
What did it mean for you personally, not only to just have that performance, but to have it against, and maybe, I mean, like I said, like, I don't want to take anything away from anybody else that you played during the year. Like, we've talked about the talent that was in the Horizon League this year. Mm-hmm. But what did it mean for you to have that kind of performance against a backcourt just loaded with guys that are NBA prospects, like Rob Dillingham, Reed Sheppard, Antonio Reeves, DJ Wagner. Like, these guys are all going to get their cup of coffee at the very least at some point. Yeah. Like, did that, was that reaffirming for you in some ways, or was it just like, I knew I could do that?
A little bit of both, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Like, as a shooter, especially, you got to have the confidence that you can go and do anything and compete with anyone and make any shot. So, I've always had that type of confidence in myself and that willingness to compete with whoever it's going to be. But obviously to do something like that on that stage and against that type of talent, it definitely made me feel like, hey, all this work that I put in and all these, this whole journey, so far, it's kind of been worth it. Like, it's kind of starting to pan out, and obviously there's still a ton of room to grow and still a lot of goals left to achieve, but it definitely made me feel like, hey, I'm doing something right here, and this is we're going to keep progressing and making things happen.
Was it tough? Did it make the NC State loss like sting a little bit more, that like you got a bit of a taste of it first, that it's like we got the Kentucky win and then you play this great NC State team that goes to the Final Four and has loads of perimeter defenders and you still have another great game. I believe that game went to overtime.
Yeah.
So it was like a very close game. Like, how tough was that to deal with, especially coming off the high of that first round win?
Man, it was horrible, to be honest.
Yeah.
To go from that, like you said, that high of winning that game, and then just a super intense, tough game against NC State, and they're a great team. Obviously, made it to the Final Four, so. We can't fault ourselves for that, but at the same time, to be that close to a Sweet 16 berth, and then who knows what would have happened after that. It's tough because as a competitor, you kind of forget pretty fast about the win you just had, and then the loss is what stings. So, like reflecting on it, obviously super happy with how it all went down, but at the time, it really hurt, that NC State loss, and mm-hmm. and it always hurts too when everyone tells you like, oh, like, great tournament run, NC State went to the Final Four. It's like, yeah, that should have been us. You know what I mean?
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. That almost makes it tough. Like, I feel like sometimes people are like, oh, well, it's nice to like lose to the team that goes really far. And it's like, at the same time, it's like that could have been me. So I get
yeah,
what you're
exactly.
from there. What has the aftermath been like? And then the pre-draft process, I don't want this to come across as like condescending or like anything, but like when you were at a Division II school, did you think that you would be at a point in a couple of years where like, hey, I'm doing a bunch of like pre-draft workouts with NBA teams?
No, that's a.
Oh. We lost him real quick. We're going to get him back on in just a sec. Oh, you're good. Oh. All right. You're good. Sorry about that.
Okay. Oh, no worries. I said, I was just talking to somebody the other day, and I was like, it's weird. It's a weird balance because I feel like I deserve it and I should be in this spot and all that type of stuff. I'm confident in myself. But
yeah,
if I told myself even a year or two ago at Hillsdale, like, hey, you're going to go work out for some NBA teams, I would have been like, you're crazy. What are you talking about? That makes no sense. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of just taking it all in stride and trying to figure out how my life has changed.
Mm-hmm. What's been the biggest focus for you during your pre-draft process? Like, are there things that you have really focused on either adding to your game or that might be new that you're going to go into these workouts and teams are going to be like, oh, you know, that was different. That wasn't something we saw as much of on film.
Yeah, definitely just working on kind of being able to prove again that I can do stuff on the ball, and whether it's coming off – obviously in the NBA you play with a ton of get actions, a ton of handoffs and things like that, so just showing that I can create more than just a three-point shot off of that, obviously that's very valuable, but being able to pass it really well, like to the opposite corner, that's mm-hmm. a super high valued shot in the NBA, so being able to create that for other people is important, and just working on my ball handling and my defense are the two biggest things right now that I'm trying to focus on so that I can show that I'm capable of performing in multiple ways.
For sure. For sure. Well, congratulations on all the success that you've had so far, and best of luck these coming weeks as we head over to the NBA draft. For people who want to keep following along with your journey, where are the best places that they can find you on social media?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at jgolke34, just J and then my last name, 34. Both of them are the same, and I'll be trying to keep people updated on how the process is going on those and things like that. So definitely check them out.
For sure. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for everybody that's listening in. Make sure to subscribe to us on our YouTube channel and our podcast feed as well. Subscribe to NoCeilingsNBA.com for written content on the daily as well as we head into the 2024 NBA draft. Thank you all for joining us.